On this week's 51%, we'll learn about ovarian transplants.
What if you could just give an infertile woman a new ovary? This could be like resetting her biological clock.
Hear from the executive director of Carlos Santana's foundation and her mission to help underserved youth, and find out about a project to register births via text. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
To reach the unreachable star, this is my quest, to follow that star, no matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right, without question or
Women struggling to get pregnant may soon have a new option available. In the past, they could get donated eggs or even freeze their own. Now they may be able to opt for an entire ovary. Reporter Robin Amer explains.
36-year-old twins Carol Enoch and Katie Panic are physically identical.
We're thin, gangly, pale skin, freckles, dark blue eyes, wavy blonde hair.
But starting when they were teenagers, their menstrual cycles were different. Carol got her period every 2 weeks, and Katie didn't get hers at all.
When I was, I guess, 14, I was diagnosed with premature ovarian failure. Labs looked like that of someone who had undergone menopause, which obviously at that age I had not.
Katie's ovaries weren't producing eggs or estrogen. She had to take artificial hormones to go through puberty. And there was a painful irony to this difference. Carol with her reproductive system on overdrive, while Katie's shut down before she'd even finished high school. Here's Carol.
What a cruel twist of fate to have a sister who, it's very important to her to have her own children, to experience pregnancy, to experience motherhood, and to not have the ability to do it. And then the sister who's like, whatever, I'll totally make it work, has everything that's necessary to do that.
Flash forward to 2005. Katie's in medical school in Little Rock and Carol's a leasing agent in Chicago. Here's Carol.
I was in the kitchen making coffee, television is on in the living room, and I hear the letters POF. And again, that's premature ovarian failure. So I run into the other room, and it was some morning talk show.
Also in this half hour, groundbreaking surgery. Identical twins share a gift. One sister gives the other her ovary so that she can finally have children.
And there's this doctor that's being interviewed in these two twins, and he's talking about doing the first live ovarian tissue transplant.
Stephanie, Melanie, and their fertility surgeon, Dr. Sherman Silver, are joining us now from St. Luke's Hospital in St. Louis. This is the first time this operation's been done in the United States, right?
Yeah, this absolutely is the first time, and the first time between identical twins.
And I'm sitting here watching this going, holy hell.
Carol offered to give Katie an ovary, and she accepted. Here's Katie again.
It was more of a how than an if. Can we really just pick up the phone and cold call Dr. Sherman Silver?
The answer was yes, they could. And they did.
Well, hi, I'm sorry that I got delayed in surgery, but I'm ready.
This, of course, is Dr. Silver. Luckily, I was able to call him too, at the Infertility Center of St. Louis. Dr. Silber is a pioneer. He's developed more than one type of surgery that no one had ever done before. In 1977, he did the first testicular transplant, because that is apparently also a thing. He was the first doctor to reverse a vasectomy. And then, in the mid-90s, he got interested in female infertility. In vitro fertilization, or IVF, was already prevalent, but the process has drawbacks. A woman has to take a series of hormone injections that stimulate her ovaries to produce more eggs. Those eggs are then harvested, fertilized in a lab, and implanted back in her body. Dr. Silber says this can be complicated and painful, and it doesn't always work.
Many patients go through two or three or four cycles of IVF. They spend $50,000 or $100,000 on it. God knows where they get that money. Maybe they mortgage their house.
This figure might be a little high. Other doctors say it's more like $12,000 to $18,000 per IVF cycle. But because women need two cycles on average to conceive, that can add up. But what if you could just give an infertile woman a new ovary? This could be like resetting her biological clock. That's how Dr. Silber came up with the ovarian transplant. The procedure is pretty simple, he says, much easier to perform than a normal organ transplant.
All of a woman's eggs are really located in the outer shell of the ovary, the outer 1 millimeter. It's very, very thin, like a piece of skin. So that's fantastic because it allows us to take out that that outer shell and transplant it anywhere as though it were a skin graft.
So instead of connecting all the tiny veins and arteries one by one as you would with a heart or lung transplant, you can take the donated ovary and graft it onto the old one.
The blood vessels grow into it and it starts working, and lo and behold, in 4.5 months, you have a new ovary that's working perfectly normally.
Now, this description sounds pretty rosy, but consider this. A healthy woman at peak fertility has about a 20% chance of getting pregnant if she has sex while she's ovulating. IVF gives a woman an even better chance, about 30 or 40% with every cycle. Dr. Silber's scenario also presumes that the receiving woman has at least the vestiges of her malfunctioning ovaries. But Katie was born without ovaries. It was only the second time Dr. Silber had performed this surgery, and it took everybody by surprise. So Dr. Silber had to get creative.
So their transplant, I had to put onto the ovarian ligament. And it comes off the uterus and attaches to the ovary and keeps the ovary in place.
That worked well, but Katie wasn't just missing her ovaries. As if that weren't enough, Dr. Silber discovered that she was also born without fallopian tubes. So even with Carol's donated ovary, Katie would never conceive naturally. There was no way for an egg to make its way down into her uterus. Here's Katie.
Yeah, I was really sad. And I mean, still, you know, grateful for not having to take hormones every day and all of this. But this was the moment in this process that was sad.
Katie still needed the ovarian transplant. Without the hormones it produced, she wouldn't have been able to carry a pregnancy naturally, which ultimately she did.
Daddy tried to tickle me.
Doctors took eggs from Carol's one remaining ovary, fertilized them using sperm from Katie's husband, Ralph, then implanted the embryos in Katie's womb. And 9 months later, Katie gave birth to her own set of twins, a boy named Liam and a girl named Hadley.
Oh,
you're under
blanket protection.
Dr. Silber has now operated on 9 sets of identical twins and 2 pairs of sisters who weren't twins. In those 2 cases, the receiving sister took immunosuppressant drugs, just as she would have with any other organ transplant. And all but one of these women eventually had a baby. It's also possible to do a transplant between women who aren't related at all.
We haven't done one, but frankly, I don't see what's wrong with it. They just have a choice if they want to have an egg donation or if they want to have an ovary transplant.
Still, Dr. Silber believes that the broadest application for this surgery is for women who will have their own healthy ovaries removed, frozen, and then re-implanted later on.
The real payoff for this that's going to, I think, revolutionize infertility treatment is you freeze the ovary, you transplant it back, whether it's just to delay childbearing until you're 40 or 45, or whether it's because you're about to undergo cancer treatment or autoimmune treatment.
So far, he's removed and frozen ovaries from 160 women. 14 had their ovaries put back in, and 8 have now had babies. But there's a caveat. There are only like 10 doctors who perform ovarian transplants, and Dr. Silber is the only one in the U.S. And this surgery is still classified as experimental. The American Society of Reproductive Medicine says ovarian transplants shouldn't be used just to extend a woman's natural fertility, at least not until more research is done. Dr. Silber says he thinks there's already enough research out there to take this procedure mainstream, but he acknowledges one downside. The surgery isn't permanent. At some point between 2 and 9 years after the transplant, the donated tissue will fail. It will stop producing hormones and eggs. Katie's lasted for 6 years. But now she's back on artificial hormones, so she doesn't have to go through menopause again. She could have opted for a second transplant, using a piece of Carol's ovary that they froze and saved for later. And ironically, Carol is now one of these women who might benefit from having her own healthy frozen ovary put back in.
Have you ever thought about going through this procedure again, but with the purpose of like preserving your own fertility for the future?
No. Family is my number one priority in life. I also am not a person who has a traditional view of what family is.
Carol doesn't think of Liam and Hadley as her own children, but they're very close.
Can you tell me what you know about your Aunt Carol and how you guys are related to her?
That she is extra special. I think that she has extra love.
Oh, buddy, you're a heartbreaker. I love it.
They don't care that the surgery was experimental. They're grateful that it was an option at all. I'm Robin Emer. This production was part of the STEM Story Project, distributed by PRX and made possible with funds from the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation.
This week, we bring you another installment of the 51% segment called Force of Nature from Dr. Sharon Ufberg. She is co-founder of the personal development wellness company Borrowed Wisdom in Napa Valley, California. She regularly blogs for the Huffington Post. This week, she interviews Shelley Brown, who has dedicated a large portion of her life to supporting underserved youth. Brown has been at the helm of musician Carlos Santana's Milagro Foundation as its executive director since 2000 and has guided the foundation in giving more than $6 million to agencies serving children around the world, from Africa to India to the United States in the California Bay Area. Brown's background is as an educator with 25 years of experience as a principal and teacher in San Francisco area school districts. Brown describes the foundation.
So the Milagro Foundation was started by Deborah and Carlos Santana in 1998 because they felt that children were the future and that needed to be where their philanthropic efforts went. It's a way to break the cycle of poverty, and so it's important to me because my background has always been with underserved children as a teacher and as a principal, and I was quite exciting when they started the foundation in 1998. They asked, their children were attending my school in San Rafael, which was a bilingual multicultural school, and they asked me to be a member of their founding board. And then, of course, it was a perfect fit for me. So it was really exciting to be able to do something for children on a bigger scale.
How exciting when you got to make the shift from a board member to the executive director. I'm sure you have lots of examples of the people and communities that you touched over these last 16 years. I'd love if you'd share a few of those stories with us.
Initially, we were focusing on just helping children in poverty. And we were starting in the Bay Area and reaching out. People were coming to us. So I guess one of my favorites, I have a couple favorites. One of them was a program in East Los Angeles for severe poverty and children who were really suffering. It was a woman who wrote us a letter about this young boy who was molested and had no place to go, and she was a pediatrician who just brought this child in and started working with him and bringing, he was abused and hurt and beaten, and she started working with him, and that was one of the letters that moved us the most, and that was in 1998. And as time has gone on, she now runs the violence intervention program that's associated with the hospitals there. It's huge. They have a senior elder abuse program. They have children's abuse programs. There is a Carlos Santana. Carlos and Deborah at the time started built a building there. So there's a building named for the Santanas. It's a huge campus, and we started with Astrid just, you know, she just had this vision and this mission. She saves thousands and thousands of children. I think they see 600 children a month, which is just shocking.
The power of one woman to make a difference in how your foundation, the Milagro, which means miracle, correct?
Yes, it does.
What miracles you brought to those children by connecting with Astrid. Are there any programs, the other programs that you work with children to share that have been especially touching for you?
Well, we started a program with a young man who had this vision for educating children in Haiti, and he wrote to us also. And when we first started, we really started as a grassroots organization, and our niche was to try to find the people like the Astrids who were just starting these. It was a vision and a passion for them. And this man was from Haiti, and he had the vision and passion for starting a school for children in Haiti. And they are now, I think they have 5 schools, and they're educating hundreds. That was another, you know, beginning story for us. And there are so many more. Let me think of another one.
Something that you've just recently taken on that's a new project that's
exciting? Yes, sure. We're recently taking on, it's not quite as grassroots, but it is. It's the homeless prenatal program in San Francisco, and we just actually decided to fund them yesterday at our board meeting. That is a program that works with thousands of homeless pregnant women in San Francisco, and they not only work with them, their goals are to have no preterm births, to really work with the mothers on nutrition and education. And then another goal of theirs is to actually get them into the workforce. And they hire a lot of the women that have been their clients. So we're very excited to be part of that. Women's Audio Mission is another amazing program in San Francisco that takes middle school students and teaches them about how to be audio techs for the rock and roll industry, or for the music industry, actually. So this is a program this is a career that has mostly been for men. And this wonderful woman who started the Women's Audio Mission is training all these girls to go into that field.
That sounds so exciting.
Oh,
it's a great tie-in having your foundation with Carlos, who has been such an important person in the music world, to connect the dots there. Do you have any big mission on your horizon that you haven't actually launched yet, but that you're out there looking to engage in?
Yes, we are working very hard on a telemedicine, telehealth program. And that is a program that Carlos built a medical clinic in his hometown, his home birth town of Otlan, Mexico, which is about 3 hours outside of Guadalajara. That was where he was born and lived for the first 10 to 12 years of his life. And then he went to Tijuana from there. And this project is a connection between a hospital, a pediatric hospital in Tijuana, and the clinic in Mexico. And we're really excited. We've been working on this for 2 years. And we have an expert hired, a telehealth expert, who's connecting with all kinds of people that are doing this telehealth, which is medicine through technology. So you've seen the screen, you know, people talking to doctors over screens, and they can actually diagnose. We're going to start with education. So in Otlan, there's a major problem with prenatal disease and perinatal. So there's a cerebral palsy is one of the issues. They're perfectly preventable, and they just need to have education on how to take care of themselves when they're pregnant.
Shelley Brown, thanks so much for being with us today.
Sure, my pleasure.
This is Dr. Sharon Ufberg on Force of Nature for 51%.
For more information, visit milagrofoundation.org. Again, that was Shelley Brown, executive director of musician Carlos Santana's Milagro Foundation, speaking with Dr. Sharon Ufberg. Parents want the best for their children. This includes education. To attend class, babies must be registered. And parents want their children to get a job and vote later in life, but this, too, has roadblocks in many African countries. Jean Delma, a young computer specialist in the Ivory Coast, has developed a possible solution. We get this report from DW correspondent Madeline Meyer.
It's late in the evening at the office of Jean Delma in the Ivorian capital, Abidjan. The computer specialist is still working on his project, which focuses on using smartphones to register babies in rural areas. Delma says the project has not been easy.
There are many moments when I just want to give up, especially when you hear that a big company I already talked with is now implementing a similar project. But I won't allow myself to be discouraged.
The following day, Delma visits the village of Songong. He is looking for young mothers to test his invention. He hopes the results of his voluntary work will persuade Ivory Coast's government to implement his SMS program instead of his competitors. Some women have agreed to take part in the registration. One of them is Nadege Kuma, who works as a housemaid. She herself doesn't have any official documents, and because of that, she has struggled to earn a decent living.
I can hardly manage with what I earn. I have my house and I have to pay for all of that. Quite honestly, I can't make it.
That is why Kumana wants her daughter registered. She doesn't want her little one to go through the same experience.
I want my daughter to go to school. I want her to go far in her studies, unlike me, who didn't even go to school. She has to, so that she can achieve something in her life.
Children without an official birth certificate do not officially exist and thus cannot be registered in a school, get an identification card, or even vote later on. This often condemns them to a life of poverty and hopelessness. Until now, new parents in Songong had to drive for up to 2 hours to get to the registration office. Thanks to the SMS service, the cumbersome and expensive trip will be unnecessary, says Delma.
We are IT experts. Why can't we recommend a very simple solution which can be easily applied to register births? I believe that we are all guardians of our villages.
Delma heads back to his office where he checks whether all the data has been registered. His program, called Moni Ba, a local expression used to congratulate a newborn's family, has proven to be reliable. It has already won several international awards, but the government is yet to fully embrace this project.
My dream is that we can implement Moni Ba soon, not only in Ivory Coast, but also in Burkina Faso, Niger, Togo, and Benin. This could make a legal existence for millions of children possible.
In the meantime, Delma continues to work hard to get official documents for the 2,000 babies he has already registered through his program.
That was Madeline Meyer reporting for Deutsche Welle. And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. And follow us on Twitter at 51% Radio. Percent is spelled out. This week's show is number 1400.